On Labor Day weekend, are you all laboring? To rest, knowing that it's a time of going to the beach with the rest of Southern California, right? And cookouts, and I just hope that some point during this weekend that you take some time to care for yourself. The intention of the holiday is to honor the work, the labor that we do, and to just pause. And no matter what kind of labor it is that you're doing, that you just take care of yourself a little bit. I'd love to rename it self-care, you know, a self-care holiday. And so it's a time for you to take responsibility to take care of yourself. And so I hope that in some time over this weekend that you do something special for yourself in taking care of yourself. You know, it's the unofficial end to summer, and traditionally this is when school has started. Most of us of a certain age are used to starting school on Tuesday after Labor Day, correct? Am I correct? Okay, good. I just want to make sure I'm on the same planet. Most of the schools have started. I don't know about you, but most of our little ones are already back in the swing of it. But there's something about the energy of this weekend, about getting back into the swing of it, getting back into our normal schedule. So I thought that in honor of the beginning of school, I thought I'd share a couple little stories with you that I found, if I can get through them without laughing. Oh, I told you, they're funny. Sorry. Okay. So this is from one of the teachers, a teacher's blog, and she said that when our students began raising donations for Child Abuse Prevention Week last year, she said the school's administration did its part by setting up a collection box outside the principal's office and displaying a banner by the front door. And it said, "Please give $1 to help stop child abuse in the front office." I don't know about that school. I love this one. And so this is a teacher shared. He said, "I was walking through the hallways at our middle school recently, and I saw a new substitute teacher standing outside his classroom with his forehead against a locker. I heard him mutter, 'How did you get yourself into this?' Knowing that he was assigned to a difficult, challenging class, I tried to offer some moral support. 'Are you okay?' I said. 'Can I help?' And he said, he lifted his head, looked at me, and he replied, 'I'll be fine as soon as I get this kid out of his locker.'" And so let us bless the teachers and administrators and all those who serve and support our kids. We know it's not an easy job. We love you. Thank you for all your service and your hard work. And so again, we're getting back in the swing today. We're starting a new month. I'm very excited about it. It's our theme this month. We're exploring the concept of divine order and harmony. Doesn't that sound rich and fun and like exciting? Yeah, no, I know it doesn't. But the way that we're looking at it will be rich and fun and exciting, because divine order is the what happens when we connect with living truly a spiritual life, when we can realize that we are part of a greater expression of God, of life, when we have something that's bigger than we are, that we are part of, then we start to see that we're not living in chaos. That's the whole idea of the month. Like, you know, I like to give you the end at the beginning. So just in case something happens in the next 20 minutes, that's what I want you to leave with. And so we're getting back in the swing. Not only what happens over the summer, I think, is that we have our vacations and we have our time off, and it's so beautiful here. It's so beautiful here all year round. So we're outside doing things, going to the beach, going hiking, traveling. And so what happens is we kind of get out of our normal rhythms. I was really excited. At first, I was very disappointed that my daughter started school on the 15th of August. I was upset about it until that week when she went back to school. And I was like, wow, look at this rhythm of my life. There's order to it. There's an unfoldment to it. It doesn't feel like chaos anymore. And so I think what happens is, you know, we let the leash out a little longer on our spirituality. We let the leash out a little bit longer, maybe on our spiritual practice. So maybe we don't sit and meditate every day during the summer. Maybe we don't go back to the well, like I was talking about last week, and read something of spirituality or Ernest Holmes or the Bible or something every day. Maybe we don't do that in the summer as much. Maybe we just kind of drift a little bit and let life be. And then what do we realize? What usually happens? Things start to get shaky. Things start to get a little chaotic. maybe some stuff starts to come up, some old thought patterns start to come up that don't serve us anymore. Maybe we start to worry about things a little bit more. Maybe a little bit of fear creeps in there. And so the idea of getting back in the swing is there's something called race consciousness, and that's a belief that's held by a group of people. And so and sometimes we talk about race consciousness and group mind and all of that as a bad thing. There's a couple of moments in the year when it's actually a really good thing that I like to ride the wave of race consciousness, and this is one of them. Back to school is a race consciousness experience, as is the New Year's, right? Letting go of the old and starting the new. New Year's is just a day. It doesn't matter. It might be a Tuesday. It could be a Friday. It doesn't matter. It's just a day. But there's something about us starting anew, right? Starting fresh. Well, a lot of us have this idea that this time of year is a great time to start new projects, to step into something, to make a commitment, to move into a greater expanded way of being. This is the time when we step up, right? We step up a grade, hopefully. We step up a grade, you know? And so this is what I'm encouraging us to do, is to step up a grade. Let's be promoted to the next level of consciousness. And that's what we're talking about today. That's what we're talking about this month, how we can expand our consciousness. And I'm doing that by going back to the basics. When you first get into school, and I was reminding my daughter this last week when she had her third test in like 2 weeks, she was like, what is this about? You know, fifth grade is hard, you know? And I said to her, I said, well, what they're doing is they're reviewing everything to see where you are, to start where you want to start. And so I have this idea that we're going to go back to basics this month a little bit and take what the guiding principles and the guiding belief statement of this organization and see how we can relate to it in a new way. How we can take this information of the basics of the belief of this philosophy, because sometimes some people don't know it. Sometimes we come to church for a long time and we love the music and we love each other and we love the dessert afterwards and we love participating in our different groups, and we don't really understand what the philosophy is saying. And we have so many new people who've been coming, and I'm encouraging everybody to get into the foundations class. I'm making it a donation basis, so there's no excuse for anyone not to be able to come, because even if you have a hard time making a little bit of a donation, just come talk to me. You know I'm going to let you in the class. Because I know that if I do my job right, if I teach that class well enough, by the end you're going to be able to pay for it. That's what I know about this philosophy. And when we start to put it into practice. And so I don't want anyone to ever feel that they can't go deeper or take that step and go into class. And so I made the foundations class particularly easy this time. It's a $20 workbook fee and then just some donation each week. That's how it works. And if you want to get a certificate and make it count, at the end you pay the $45 certificate fee. That's how it works. And I don't want anyone to feel like they are not able to get into class. Who wants to get into class? But it's a real wonderful time to revisit what the truth of this philosophy is. And so we're going to do that a little bit through our Sundays, through looking at the Declaration of Principles, which is our what we believe statement. So to begin, because there's so many new people here, I realize that I throw out a lot of terms that new people might not even understand. So we are a part of an organization called the Centers for Spiritual Living. It's a larger organization that is international. There's centers around the world. We're about 500 centers all around. There's the majority of them are in North America, the United States, and Canada. And I'm still holding out. The only thing that would pull me away from this spiritual community that I love is if the Paris one opens. I might interview for that. Let's just be clear. I'll take you all with me, but you know, if that one opens, we'll talk. It's not open yet. But the idea is that we formerly were known as Religious Science, the Church of Religious Science, and so sometimes you'll hear me call myself a religious scientist. And because what are we going to, we changed our names a number of years ago, because so often we would say we're the Church of Religious Science and someone would say, Scientology? And we'd go, nope, that's something else. And they'd go, what are you? And so we went through this whole big branding process to try and figure out who are we and what do we stand for. And what came forth was that we teach spiritual living. We teach how to live a spiritual life. So we are centers for spiritual living. But spiritual livers doesn't really have a good... What's a spiritual liver? I mean, I know our liver is spiritual, but because everything is spiritual. But so we are religious scientists. That's what I consider myself. So just to understand what that means. And the philosophy that we study is called the science of mind. The founder of religious science is Ernest Holmes. He was a man who was born in the 1880s and died in 1960. And the Science of Mind book, which is what we consider our textbook, I usually have it here, it's a big heavy one. The Science of Mind textbook was written in 1926, and it outlines our philosophy completely. Now, anyone who wants to go read Ernest Holmes, that's not the book I tell you to start with, because it is kind of thick. Was that a good word? Anyone who's read it? Yeah. So it's not the easiest one to start with. There's a book called This Thing Called You, which I highly recommend. But this month, we're actually using this cute little, it's only $6. This is our book of the month. Look, it's little. And it's called What Religious Science Teaches, A New Thought Primer. And so that's what Janie read from today, and our readings will be from here. And it is a beautiful, quick little outline of what we teach and what the basis of the philosophy. And this is what I'm working with this month, and this is what we're talking about. So I'm going to start with what's called the Declaration of Principles, which is our what we believe statement. And so that was it evolved from a statement that Ernest Holmes wrote in one of his other books about it was a what I believe statement. He laid out what his belief was. And the thing I love about Ernest Holmes is this: he's a true American story. He's a pull yourselves up by your bootstraps kind of a guy. He was born in New England and was self-taught. He only went through a certain level of education, but he loved to learn. And he studied religion, and he studied science, and he studied classical philosophy, and he loved to be out in nature. And he came up through this beautiful time when science and psychology and religion and philosophy was expanding in an amazing way at the turn of this last century. And so he put together, through his studies, he put together that golden thread that ran through all the religions. He took away all the dogma and got to what the truth, the underlying truth was, and found that there is a truth that moves through all religions. There is one message that all mystics from any religious order has come up with, and that's that there's a presence of God and that we are part of it, that there is only one. Whatever the mystics have come up with, it's that there is only one and that it's alive as each and every one of us, and that's the foundation of this teaching. That there is only one presence and power. And so he started to formulate this philosophy of living and really didn't want it to be a religion. He was against it being a religion. He was a great orator. He was a great speaker. And he had all these people who were doing lectures on this philosophy. But he didn't really want it to be a church. And through the organizational politics and all of that, they soon came to realize that in order for this to exist, to continue after his passing, he knew to have the legacy that this was the form that it would take. And so his idea originally was that people of all religions could study this philosophy and take it with them back into what they were practicing. And that's why I personally think of this spiritual philosophy as the bridge. We are an answer to a prayer, I think, that has been prayed in this world right now, that we can hold the space for unity. We can hold the space for connection. We can hold the space for moving through what we think our differences are, because at the foundation we realize that all of it is the expression of God. And so that's the little primer of where we come from. And I wanted to, we're going to take one part of the Declaration of Principles by Ernest Holmes today. This is the first statement. That we believe in God, the living spirit almighty, one indestructible, absolute, and self-existent cause. This one manifests itself in and through all creation, but is not absorbed by its creation. The manifest universe is the body of God. It is the logical and necessary outcome of the infinite self-knowingness of God. So you hear the thickness of that? There's a lot in there. It feels like we're going through weeds to try and figure this out. And so what this means is this. There's only one power and one presence, one essence. We don't look at God as that traditional judgy, judgmental, maybe fickle kind of, he might be happy with you, he might be mad at you, you don't know what you're going to get, you better be good just in case. That God is not the God that we're talking about. What we're talking about is a principle, an essence, a presence. And the sooner that we shift from thinking of God as a he or a she, and move to an idea that it's a spirit, that it's an essence, that it's an energy, it's a creative force of life. God is beyond the idea of a man, right? So we often think that God is made in our image and likeness. That's what we ascribe to the divine, that God is made in our image and likeness, not that we are made in God's image and likeness, which is the scripture, that we are made in the image and likeness of God itself. And so what that means is that there's a part of us that is infinite, eternal, and beyond any limitation. There's a part of you, there's a divine seed in you, there's a divine spark within you that is beyond anything that you can see and know and touch. And so I thought we would go through this a little bit, because there's some words in there. There's some words in there that we can look at. So taking it, we believe in God, the living spirit almighty, one, indestructible, cannot be destroyed, absolute and self-existent cause. Absolute means that it's complete in and of itself, that there's nothing outside of it, that there's only this presence. Self-existent means that it exists independently of other beings or causes, like nothing can attack it, nothing can affect it. It is the cause of all things. And so we know the idea of cause, that there's cause and effect, right? One of the basic scientific ideas in life and in this world in which we live is that there is a cause and an effect. And so the divine is the only cause, that it is never an effect. It is the cause of all things. And each of us is part of that divine presence. And so we are what they call the microcosm of the macrocosm. So I'm going to use mini-me. We're a mini-me of the divine. Because you'll know what that means, right? You all know what that means, right? Give me a nod. Yes? No? Yeah. Okay, good. I want to make sure you're with me. All right. So instead of saying macrocosm and microcosm, that's really kind of boring. We're the mini-me of the divine. And so you can quote me on that. And so what that means is that as the divine is a cause, we are part of that cause. We have an opportunity to create in our lives because we are part of that divine presence that is creating life itself. The part that says it's not absorbed by its creation, it never runs out. It is endless, timeless. It is ever present. It never runs out of its what I'm calling officially the creative stuff or that creative process. And the manifest body of God is that everything that we see and everything that we experience is considered the body of God. Animate, inanimate, everything we can see and know is God, including each and every one of us. I like to think that, you know, everything, it starts with the word, right? The word is spoken and everything is created. And so each of us were a thought in the mind of God at some point. God thought you and loved you into being. And each of us is that individual expression of God ever unfolding. And so there's a part of us that is infinite. There's a part of us that is eternal. There's a part of us that has always been and always will be because we are a part of the divine heart being expressed in life. And the logical and necessary outcome, the self-knowingness of God. So this is the interesting part of it. This answered for me why we are here. So when I found Science of Mind, I found Religious Science 20 years ago. I was a crazy, mixed-up 20-something I had a wild 20s, and was lost, found myself being picked up by the scruff of my neck and dropped in Southern California and in the middle of the woo-woo capital of the world, Encinitas. Yeah, right? Have you been there? Yeah, yeah. And particularly Leucadia, where I think all the old surfers and hippies go that's nirvana for them. Yeah, well, God bless it. And I love it there. But here I was, this, you know, raised in puritanical New England, and I get dropped in the middle of smoothie drinking and kombucha drinking, you know, Encinitas. I had no idea what that was then. I do now. So I'm as woo-woo as the next one now. And so for me, I was lost. I didn't understand life. I felt like I was always battling against life, trying to get my stuff together, trying to figure out why I was here, trying to figure out what I was supposed to do with my life, trying to figure it all out. Everything that I thought was supposed to be had completely fallen apart in about 8 months of my life. I lost everything that I thought was important to me, which obviously wasn't very important in the long run, and found myself in a new place, like kind of like Dorothy waking up with my eyes seeing color for the first time, and I found my way into a religious science church. And when I started to understand this philosophy, I fell into foundations pretty quickly. And when I started to understand and study this, everything fell into place for me. I woke up to the idea that I have a part to play in my life. I'm part of the reason why it was as messy as it was, because it took that much mess to wake me up. And I was the one who was going to be able to clean it up. It's an empowering thought that you're not stuck in any one situation. That there may be something that's happening in your world, that's happening in your experience, but you are not stuck. It's because of through our consciousness and through our connection to that divine presence that we are, that we get to change, that we get to shift, that we get to expand. And as we connect to that, as we trust it, as we allow it, as we realize that we are ever unfolding and ever evolving in our consciousness and evolving in our thought processes and evolving in our creative power, that we can accept more and more. And so what this said to me, this last part, that the body of God is the logical and necessary outcome of the infinite self-knowingness of God. What that says is that the infinite presence, in its infinite nature, God is all things. It's timeless, ageless, boundless, and it knows all, it is all things. It knows all things. And in order for it to experience anything, it can't unless it creates something. God can't know anything because it knows all things. It can't experience life because it is all life. And so what it did was it created. Now, we could call it the Big Bang. You could call it whatever you want. But everything started from that idea of an expansion of consciousness, an expansion of being. And everything was made. And so each and every one of us is a part of the aspect of God that needs to be experienced. I love that idea. Because we are all necessary. We are all necessary to the totality and the wholeness of this life. It makes sense to me that this is why we are here. We are here to express who we are, to experience the gifts that we have been given, because we are God in action. And God is not fulfilled unless we are living our lives fully. Unless we are expressing who we are, unless we can accept who we are, we can love who we are, and we can show it to the world. We are here to make manifest heaven on earth. That's God in expression and God in expansion. And so we are the necessary outcome of that expression of God. Everything that we see, everything that is created is part of the body of God. So everything, animate, inanimate, every experience is simply God in action. And I can't say that enough. I know I've said it 5 times already. And that's because we are part of it. There's no separation. I thought of a silly little example. I was trying not to do it, but I'm going to do it. I was going to save it for next week when I talk about us, how we are connected to this. I want you to look at your fingers. Look down at your fingers. And I want you to think about being the top of your pointer finger. Say you're your pointer finger, okay? And your consciousness is in your pointer finger. And you're looking over at your middle finger. Okay? It's saying hi to it. All right? Is it going to think that it's connected to it? It's not. It thinks it's a completely separate entity, right? The tip of your finger, if it had consciousness and looked at your next finger, it's going to say, hey, look over there. There's another finger. It looks completely different. It's taller than I am. It may be, mine's a little fatter than the other one. I don't know what's up with that. But, you know, my nail's different, whatever, you know. There's a difference there. But are they separate? They're not. They're connected. And do you think that if the consciousness was in the tip of your fingers, that they would even recognize that they're part of something greater, which is their arm? Or your whole entire body? That its source, does it think that its source is your heart? That it's alive because of your heart that's very far away from it? It won't realize that. Now, I don't know how far this analogy is actually going to go, because I'm sure there's a place where it's not going to work. But I know that every time you look at your fingers this week, you're going to realize that you are connected to something greater than you think you are. And that each one of us as a separate expression of the divine, because that pointer finger and that middle finger, and let's talk about the ring finger and the pinky and the thumb, they all think that they're different. They have different names. They have different ways of being. They actually have different things to do. I'm not going to do all of them. Right? But they're one. And that's how we are. We are connected at the core to this source and this energy and this essence, this presence. We have one heart. We have one mind that we are connected to. And we can, as we go along in this month, what we're going to talk about is how we can embrace that and we can use it to bring ourselves to a higher and higher place of consciousness, because it's time for us to progress up a level. It's time for us to get back in the swing of realizing that this is a spiritual life. If God is all there is, and it is everywhere present, and it is the only thing that is, our job is to remember that in everything that we do. So one of the gifts of studying and practicing the science of mind is that it supports that growth in consciousness. That's why I'm clanging the bell of classes. Because I can stand up here and tell you funny stories and inspire us to think differently and look differently at the world and to remember who we are. But when you get down to it, we have to get to work. It's about doing our spiritual work, our spiritual practice. And we do that the best in class. And we've got a bunch of classes coming up. My foundations class, Sherry's five gifts class, and Beth Haas is going to teach a class on meditation starting in October, which is a great one too. And so the idea is these spiritual practices, these tools are the things that are going to help you work to expand your consciousness. That's what it's all about. So throughout the ages, the great thinkers, the philosophers, and spiritual masters have all talked about a higher realm of awareness that's within us. A state of mind, a way of thinking, where we experience the ultimate sense of well-being. So the Buddhists call this higher realm of awareness nirvana. They describe it as being like a gentle breeze that finds all things worthy of caress. The Hindus consider this awareness a mystical union with Brahman, their chief god. The Zoroastrians call it paradise. And I say that I love this, that they say that the loveliest become lovelier. And the master teacher Jesus referred to it as the kingdom of heaven. And he said that it's accessible to everyone here and now. That it's not a place that we go to later if we're good. He never taught that. He said that the kingdom of heaven is now. It's within, it's here and now. And his entire ministry was based on the kingdom of heaven. He had discovered an awareness within him that greatly enriched the living experience. And his only goal, his primary objective, was to teach others to do the same. He didn't see himself as the exception. He saw himself as the example. He came to teach us that these things and greater shall ye do. He wanted us to manifest heaven on earth as our experience. And he wanted us to do it even better than he did. Because he knew that we were going to go on, that we were going to continue to expand. And that teaching is part of the core teaching of what science of mind talks about. And so, the Gospels were originally written in Greek. And I found this interesting. I wanted to share it with you. And so, in Greek, the word kingdom means realm. It means a realm. And the word heaven means a process of rising up to higher levels of happiness and empowerment. And so, the kingdom of heaven translates as a higher realm of awareness within us, characterized by greater degrees of happiness and empowerment. How amazing is that? And so what came to me this week when I was trying to put this all together, I kept getting a message of one of Jesus' teachings, and I was like, well, I don't know how that fits. How is that really going to fit? And so I said I'm going to trust God and just talk about it anyways and know that it has something to do with what we're talking about, because it kept coming to me. And I kept seeing a farmer. And so this is the parable of the sower, the farmer sowing seeds. We in the Science of Mind talk about our thoughts as if they were seeds that we are planting in consciousness that are created in our experience. So the creative process is through our minds. It's not through hoping. It's not through pleading. It's not through begging. It's through declaring and claiming truth and knowing truth that we plant seeds in consciousness and pull that experience into our lives. And so this is the parable of the sower. Jesus was sharing his teaching with a large crowd by the lake. And he said this, "A farmer went out to sow his seed, and as he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places where it did not have much soil, and it sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow. But when the sun came up, the plants were scorched and they withered because they had no root. Other seed fell among the thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. And still other seed fell on good soil, where it produced a crop, 160 or 30 times what was sown." And he went on to say, "Whoever has ears, let them hear." I always thought that was interesting. Don't we all have ears? Okay, whoever has ears, let them hear. And the disciples came to him and asked, "Why do you speak to the people in parables?" And Jesus replied, he said, "Because the knowledge of the secrets of the kingdom of heaven has been given to you, but not to them. Whoever has will be given more, and they will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from them. This is why I speak to them in parables. Though seeing, they do not see. Though hearing, they do not hear or understand. But blessed are your ears, your eyes, because you see, and your ears, because you hear." Now, that's one of those stories from the Bible that I was like, "Oh, what?" Growing up, I didn't understand it. For those who have, more will be given, and for those who don't, even what they have is going to be taken away. I remember saying, "Okay, forget that. I don't get it. This doesn't make sense to me." But now I understand it. Because what is it that you can have that will bring more to you? And that if you don't have it, everything will lose. He's talking about consciousness. For those who have the consciousness of knowing what his true teaching is, we will have an abundance. When you have a consciousness of abundance, you won't be poor. If you have a consciousness of health, there is no illness. If you have a consciousness of God as your true nature, you're never going to be afraid or be alone. Because you know that God is alive as you. It's about consciousness. And so when we can move into a place of expanding our consciousness, we expand the experience of our lives. So when he talks about the different where the different seeds fall, it's all about how we approach our teaching, how we approach our spiritual learning. And so And we may, each of us may have a little bit of each of these consciousnesses alive within us. I'm gonna say that and own it. That sometimes maybe we've moved through some of this experience, but sometimes we're complex beings, and sometimes there's more to us than what we think. And so the first type of soil was the pathway, and it symbolized it's hard-packed soil, and so the seed had nowhere to go, and so the birds saw it, and hello, they're gonna come take it up. And this represents the person who is totally unreceptive to truth. As Jesus said, they have ears but cannot hear. They aren't ready to receive it, that message, that truth. And so the birds come and snatch the seeds away. There's a time when something is presented to us and we're not ready to hear it, right? We're not ready to see things in a certain way because maybe it might take us to stretch a little bit. Maybe we need to release some of the pain that we've been carrying as righteously as we do sometimes. Maybe we're not ready to let go of our judgments of how things should be rather than accepting how things are. We're not ready to hear it. We can't hear it. Those are the seeds that fall on the path. The second was the type of soil that was on rocky ground. And Jesus said that this soil represents those who hear the word of truth and are happy to hear it. It's that beginning truth student, the one that knows that I can manifest a parking spot at Christmas at the mall. Just watch me, right? Like that when we start to connect and we start to learn new things, it's that new student who gets really excited and is embracing this. And yes, Science of Mind, woo, okay. And then something hits. oh God, please help me, please help me, please help me, God, please help me, please help me, please help me, God, please, 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 right? You know, instead of knowing that things are unfolding for our greatness, even in the middle of a challenge, even in the middle of something difficult, that something's coming for us, that there's a reason for it, we go back into trying to avoid it or trying to make it go away. Those are the ones, when the sun comes out, it's going to scorch it. We don't have a deep root of knowing who we are and our connection. And we all move through that. We all move through that experience. There's nothing wrong with it. But what we do with it, what we do with that is what takes us to the next level. The third type of soil was the soil with thorns growing with the seed. And Jesus said this soil represents those who hear the word of truth but use it selfishly to get the stuff of this world. We try and use it just for manifestation's sake. So that's like believing that, you know, my worth has to do with the car I drive and the job I have and the money I've got and the house I live in. We've all been through that, right? Because most of us were alive in the 90s. Yeah. And those big houses and, oh my goodness, and all the stuff. And look at what I'm wearing, you know. It doesn't say anything about the nature of who we are. And I think we've been learning over the last couple of years that a lot of money doesn't make you a good person. We are all being called to decide who we want to be in this world. I love the quote from Jim Carrey. I saw this week. I put it up on Facebook. I was so proud we're having I'm doing Jesus and Jim Carrey today. He said, "I wish that everyone could be rich and famous to know that it's not the answer." Right? There's something in this culture that's ingrained in our children that they need to be superstars. You know how many kids want to be YouTube stars now? Oh my goodness. You know, the idea that if I don't get how many likes on my Instagram pictures, you know, or my whatever, like that somehow is going to make us happy. That's going to fulfill us. It doesn't. And that's what the thorns are. The thorns are going to grow and choke out our truth, our plant, our experience of life. And then at last we have that good ground. And those are the ones who hear the word of truth, accept it, and begin to bear fruit. They do their work. We do our work to develop consciousness. We do our work to connect with the divine and to realize that God's alive as us. And so this month, what I want us to do is to choose what kind of student we want to be. I worked with the teens a couple weeks ago. I've been having such a great time. I'm with the teens once a month now, as we're building our teen group leadership back up. And I've been with them once a month, and it was last month, it was like right before they were starting school. So I did this visualization and this meditation for them to let go of all the old stuff from last year, you know, all the he said and she said and oh my God, they did this and da-da-da, you know, they had a lot of that going on. And so I did this thing to clear that, and then for them to create the experience that they want. Who do you want to be? Do you remember that night before the first day of school when you were picking out your outfit when you were a kid, deciding, who am I going to be this year? There's a little piece of that. We get to start over. We get to begin again. We get to get back to work to decide who we want to be in this life and how we want to walk this path. And I encourage you to make that decision, to make that intention for yourself as you move into this fall, as this beginning again, whether you join class or not. This is a time to recommit to your spirit. This is a time to recommit to the God expressing as you. We each are called to be a light unto the world, and we are here to shine it brightly. But we can't do that unless we're connected, unless we're conscious, unless we are aware that we are in motion. And so as we move through this month, I hope that these teachings, these core beliefs of the science of mind, support you in connecting with who you really are. Maybe you'll meet yourself for the first time. I've been in foundations class. I've taught this class for 15 years. I've met so many people meeting themselves for the first time. It's powerful. This is an amazing path that can bring you great joy in your life. And I encourage you to connect with your heart, to realize that there's a power there that loves you so much that it brought you into being and continues to support you and source you. And only wants goodness and joy for you. And that's God.